Okay, so let's begin by just taking a few moments to appreciate the fact that somehow it's been our good fortune to come upon these extraordinary teachings from this extraordinary lineage and offered by such a remarkable teacher as Mingyur Rinpoche and all of our teachers. How fortunate we are. And how remarkable it is that we can study in such a clear and accurate way teachings that were laid down orally well over 1,000 years ago. And yet, due to the kindness and the care and the brilliance of generations of students and teachers and translators, they land in our lap completely pure, unadulterated, and completely timely for this moment. So the Dharma and the Vajrayana Dharma is completely alive for us. How lucky we are. And then finally, how fortunate we are to be able to gather like this, thanks to the Zoom gods. And I know we're scattered all over the globe, and yet we can come and share this together in one room. So the Sangha is now available to us. How wonderful that is. So, although I see a lot of old friends here, some of you are new, and what we're doing today is the beginning of, I think, I hope, a long series. I hope it's very long for all of us, of gatherings. And we are just affectionately calling these the Nature of Mind Heart to Heart gatherings. And I have been wanting this for a long time. We have a beautiful course going on, the Tibetan Abhidharma course. And many of you are taking part in this, and maybe some of you aren't. And also, we have quartz Dharma Geek sessions for those of you who want to go more deeply. Thank God there are people like Quart on this planet. Thank God there are not many of him, but he's extraordinary. And I encourage you strongly to take part in that because whatever Quart has to say, frankly, you could publish. So, this is wonderful. We have beautiful guided meditation sessions with my dear friend Kunzang, and many of you take part in those, and those are beautiful. In fact, what we're going to do, and also, by the way, it may have been hard for you to find this gathering, find the link to gather here. We've been in furious conversation with the team to sort of try to straighten that out. It's completely absurd. And I myself actually can't find anything anymore. I only realized a couple of days ago that we now have two Vajrayana Online websites. No one told me that. They've been working on it for months and months and months. So we're going to try to make this more clear, more accessible. And what we're going to do is create a page. I think it's going to be Vajrayana Online slash live or something. We're going to create a page where it's a one portal access to everything that we're doing, the practice sessions, the Dharma Geek sessions, these heart-to-heart sessions, and whatever else comes up. And then what we've been working on for years, the Tergar train moves slowly, but hopefully will come to pass pretty soon, is we're going to have a kind of, we're calling it a sort of meditation studio. It's like if you go to a yoga studio and you're, okay, I can take this course and this course and this course. So we're going to populate it with other things that come up over time. For instance, I feel quite passionate about doing sessions, regular sessions with those of us who are elderly and whatever people are interested in. So this is going to come to pass. So because there's a lot more to learn in a very, very broad sense than just the deep dives that we're taking in Vajrayana online. And also, some of you don't learn that way, or some of you, you know, might not be particularly interested in whatever topic. I know almost nothing about Abhidharma. I've studied it, but that means nothing. And so I'm a rank student of that course. And we might find ourselves in that position, you know, from time to time. So I want to set some of you, you know, we've gathered together a lot, but this is the sort of beginning of something new. In other words, these Nature of Mind heart to hearts will go on independent of whatever we're presenting at Vajrayana online, because, you know, I think, as you know, it's extremely helpful to talk, just to gather and chat about our practice and share and get feedback and hear the experience of others. So we really need to do this. And particularly now that we're working with Nature of Mind, it's nearly impossible to get person-to-person kind of feedback about our practice. I have really no one to, for instance, I can talk to about my practice in the worlds that I just walk in normally. So this is becomes very, very helpful. And whether you have a burning question or not, just listening to the questions and the experience of others is incredibly supportive and encouraging and you know, validating for us. So in my mind, we can really talk about whatever comes up for you, because we've all, you know, we're all Nature of Mind practitioners. We don't need to be shy. And I will say that this, in my mind, the ability to do this, the encouragement to do this, is thanks to Mingyur Rinpoche. This is, it's very, very unusual. And in most cases, many of you may have had this experience. People go to a weekend with a, you know, qualified teacher, qualified lineage holder, and yada, 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 yada. And Sunday afternoon, you get pointing out, and that's it. There's nobody to talk to after that. There's nowhere to go. There's no one to check in and check our understanding, to enrich our understanding. And that's the way it's been. And more than that, it's only been very, very recently that we've that Nature of Mind teachings have come to Westerners. I will say, and I know a lot of the great, you know, Dzogchen and Mahamudra teachers, the tradition of really pointing out the essence Mahamudra and the essence Dzogchen tradition in this sort of raw, unblemished, absolutely direct way. Actually, this comes from Tolkujin. There have been a lot of great Dzogchen and Mahamudra teachers in our day. And, you know, of course, the greats, His Holiness Dogo Kensei Rinpoche, His Holiness the 16th Karmapa, Kempo Sotam Getso, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, Trungpa Rinpoche. But what Mingyur Rinpoche, what Tolkujin has passed on to his sons is quite singular, which is a complete essence, essence, essence presentation. And Mingyur Rinpoche has adopted that, and pretty much full strength. One time, oh, by the way, in the weeks to come, I'll bore you with old stories about some of the teachers I've been with, and some of you who I know of. We've been together many times. You'll probably have heard these stories many, many times and probably wish that I'd shut up. But I don't have a lot else to talk about anyway. So, but I can remember Tolkujin gave pointing out to everybody. Many of you have heard this from me. Nagi Gampa, his hermitage, the corner of the hermitage where the kitchen was literally about 5 feet from a trekking trail. It was a trail up to the top of Shivapuri Mountain, which is a sacred mountain in the Kathmandu Valley. Not many people took it. So that if someone came by that corner with a backpack on, the nuns in the kitchen who couldn't speak English, they usually just naturally figured that they were looking for Tulkujan. So they would hustle them in, give them tea, and the trekkers must have not known what the hell was going on, and brought them up to see Tulkujan. And then before long, he'd be, you know, talking to them about nature of mind. And there were times when either Eric or Andreas, the translators, would have to say, Rinpoche, these are trekkers. They're not Dharma students. He was so enthusiastic. He said of himself, he said, I don't know what's wrong with me. He said, I'm like a bird with one song, cheep, 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 cheep. We used to joke that he was like a comedian with one joke. Whenever we'd go to see him, and trust me, we were not a sophisticated group going to learn the depth and breadth of Dzogchen teachings. We were going to talk about our girlfriends and the fact that we couldn't get along with each other in the Sangha. And I can't imagine what Tulkujan must have thought about us. But nonetheless, no matter what we would ask him, literally within three beats of logic, three or four sentences, he's coming back to nature of mind. So all that is to say, and one time I asked Tulkujan, no, I'm wasting your time. So all that is to say, I feel really fortunate that we have this opportunity. So as you know, there are two broad baskets that we need to learn as students. One is the nature of mind teachings, and the other is mind training. So when we talk about nature of mind, we're talking about mind's essence. We all know this very, very, very well. This is the nature of mind. But when we're talking about mind training, we're talking about working with the expression of who we are. And mind in mind training is lo, lo jang. Lo means our conceptual mind. So we need both. We need to learn how to access nature of mind, because it's within the nature of mind that we find the unchanging, fundamental, spacious peace that we're all looking for. The authentic love, the authentic compassion, the authentic devotion, all this is true. But to be honest with you, we only access the nature of mind for a matter of minutes every day. So then the Lojong teachings teach us how to deport ourselves for the rest of the 23 hours and whatever, 57 minutes of the day. So we need this, because this is how we tame our mind, how we express our aspiration, how we work with the world, how we cause peace or war, how we create confusion or greater sanity. So this is mind training. So these go together. And they're frankly equally important, because nature of mind teachings without mind training teachings has nothing to root in. So it doesn't work for us to, you know, have a sublime experience and then be a train wreck for the rest of our life and cause trouble, because that locks the door for us. That locks the prison of samsara for us. So I think all of you know that. Also, again, you know, to talk about the generosity of our teachers, you know, in the 80s, for instance, no one even used the word Rigpa. That wasn't even a word. It wasn't even a word that was used in Western texts and teachings and presentations. In fact, to be honest with you, to some degree, this is thanks to Tulkujan and his two translators, Andreas and Eric and Eric's wife, Marcia, that we're even talking about much of this at all. And nothing of Tulkujan's. I was the first person to start recording Tulkujan with my little Sony Walkman. And thank goodness, particularly Eric and Andreas and Marcia, sort of picked up the habit. And so what we know about Tulkujan all came after he passed away. He was very unknown. He was extremely well known, of course, in the Tibetan tradition. He was His Holiness 16th Karmapa's guru. But to the Western world, he was virtually unknown. I mean, there were probably 20 of us who were students of Tolkugin's. So we are incredibly fortunate to have those teachings and then to have them as represented and, you know, brought to us through his three sons and his grandson, Patrick Rinpoche, and the Kensei Yangtze. It's just all that is to say, we're very, very lucky. So there's an almost an infinite number of things that we can talk about. A couple of weeks ago, I was thinking to myself, okay, what in the world am I going to talk about with this group? Because otherwise we would have a Vajrayana online course to base it in. And so we would just mostly refer to those teachings, but we're not doing that now. So I thought, okay, well, what am I going to talk about? And I sat down and within about 5 minutes, I think I came up with 30, 40 topics, just things that would be important for us to dig into, the points of the view, points of the meditation, points of the conduct that I thought would be wonderful. But so I'm not going to, in the weeks to come, I don't really see that there won't be a particular progression to what we're going to look at. Where I think we're just going to go topical. And then as much or more than anything, I'm interested in what you would like to hear. So that's really the most important thing to me anyway, what it is that you would like to hear. Because I get excited about all different things. I gave a talk last week on the four powers of confession, and all of a sudden I decided it was the greatest thing in the world. So if you just leave it to my devices, we'll be careening all over the map. That's not particularly helpful. So as much as anything, I really want to hear from you and what excites you and what confounds you and what we should go into further. And that would be really, really helpful. And then also there's some pieces that I've been thinking about for a long time, and I'd like to hear from you today or, and next time or whatever. You know, there's other things that we could do to try to enrich this space. For instance, I don't know why we've never done it, but we could very easily, if someone would teach me how, maybe Susan would teach me how, at the end of the session, just open, four or five chat rooms and let people just hang out. I would sign off and just let people hang out. That would be wonderful to do. So there's no end to what we could do. So for much of that, I'd like to hear from you. And again, as a final point, again, there's so much to learn that, again, I'm not going to assume to do it in any particular progression. Because from an experience point of view, things pop up all the time. And, one week we're really interested in this, and another we're really interested in this, or this comes, or this comes. And so it's going to be somewhat haphazard in terms of the formal content or the informal content coming from me. But we'll try always to bring it back to mind and nature of mind, because everything, obviously, as we know, starts and ends there. And so this is what we'll have the tremendous good fortune of being able to just churn that territory. There's many kinds of nature of mind teachings or traditions. There's many kinds of pointing out. Maybe we'll get that into that next time we get together. This is going to be a very rich space, and I personally look forward to it. So let's just open it up. I told you I wouldn't go on too long, so it wasn't too long. And let's just open it up, and we can go wherever you want to go. Remember, every question is wonderful, because if you have a question and we get into talking about that question, someone else will have that question, or maybe they didn't know that they had that question, and what we talk about will enrich them. So there's no bad question. As they say, the only bad question is the one that wasn't asked. So, okay. Lu and Do. Ludo.
Hi. Thank you. You need to put me on screen, Lou, so I can see myself.
There you are.
We're on screen.
Mm-hmm. So I make sure I'm in the middle. You know, Tim, I was doing the Nectar of the Path the other day at the Guru Yoga, Think of Me, O Guru, and then in the kindness you have shown me, you are even greater. And that word kindness, people have been asking several times lately, and maybe more than that, about how can we online feel that connection that you refer to and the other teachers do. So I had this thought. We online are not with Rinpoche for him to show us face-to-face kindness. But as you said today, all of these meetings that we have, all of this curriculum he developed, access to these amazing teachings, and that's an enormous kindness. It's even maybe more important than a one-on-one receipt of one teaching. You know, so I have really felt that kindness. I just wanted to say that to somebody.
Right.
It was you.
Yeah, you're right. I, for instance, Tokujin always said, I'm just an old man and I want to stay in retreat. The fact that it kind of started, frankly, in 1981, I created the first fall seminar. I think they just had the 41st seminar, and we would get teachings at the monastery from Chokin Ima Rinpoche, general teachings, and then everybody would decamp to Nagi Gampa for 3 days of mind teachings. That was the first time that Westerners had ever sort of descended upon him. And I can't imagine, we just must have screwed up his retreat spectacularly, but he never let on. And Mingyur Rinpoche, I have no idea why he does what he does at the speed that he does it. I can't understand it. It's absolutely mind-boggling. So this is kindness. This is enlightened activity right in front of our face. So you're right. It's wonderful for us to at least be able to acknowledge that as being the case. Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
Brooke.
First of all, it's really great to see you. And you did give me the secret transmission. Go to Vajrayana, Nature of Mind, and that's where the talks were, heart to heart in court.
Oh, good. I had forgotten that.
Thank you. I was listening to your interview with Ari Goldfield, and it popped in through his, it must be on his mailing list as well, so it popped in through his email, and I'm only 40 minutes through. That is a fabulous interview. Oh, my God. Was something the two of you were talking about that I would love to explore more. And it was in the four, I forget what the category was, but sort of the four points of Mahamudra. And it was the first one about, you know, knowing that we're appearance, knowing appearances and knowing we're appearance as well. And so there's no fear. And it was the part about no fear that really caught my attention. And that's something that I would love to explore now and going forward. And before I forget, how often are we going to meet?
Every 2 weeks.
We are going to do it every 2 weeks because you're
I think it, I think that it will populate this same spot every 2 weeks.
Every 2 weeks because they're saying October 17th online.
Oh, okay. I'll try to get that together. I don't, again, everybody works, all the teams work differently.
Okay.
And I keep saying let's just keep it consistent so that people don't have to look for emails and reminders. So thanks for bringing that up. Yeah, Ari is amazing. Ari, as you learn as you already know, trained in Harvard and worked as a lawyer for I think a matter of weeks, and ended up being the principal translator and attendant to Kempo Sultram Gyamso Rinpoche, who was a total character. Many people know of him or know him. He lived just down the street, literally, you know, probably half a mile down the road, the dirt lane from me in Kathmandu. And so I got to see him quite a bit, but I was never, I never considered myself a student of him. So Ari is his main cipher, and extraordinary intellect, extraordinary experiences. Yeah. So listen to that interview, because whatever Ari has to say, I think you can take to the bank. Similarly, I had an interview with Lama Tempa, who was Ari's main, Kempo Rinpoche's main student some years ago. And also that was very, very interesting too.
There was a dialogue between the two of you that was not only what Ari was saying, but what you were talking about and pulling out. And you said something else that really struck me, that teachers always teach through story or image. And, you know, he was saying, his teacher, whose name I won't be able to say, you know, would hold up a fist and then just open it. And that was the teacher. And you link that to Tulkurgan, you know, saying your mind is like a pee hole in the snow.
Yeah.
I'm like an eagle flying over. And you said, you know, the whole teaching is there. And that just really, that hit. But just as a topic, I'd like, you know, at this stage of the game is where the rubber hits the road. How much do I live the teachings? How much am I still taking myself as separate? How much am I living from that kind of orientation or not? So that's where I really want to dig in, the deeper application.
Good, good. Is there a question that you want to ask right now, or just generally we want to work with those principles?
I specifically wanted any thoughts you had on that appearance, that when you see, when you really understand yourself as appearance, there is no fear. That was the piece that really hit me. So, or maybe now or later.
Strangely enough, I think I've been forgetting about my interview with Ari. I think I've been contemplating this same question in the last weeks.
Interesting.
I don't know. I mean, we could blither on about it, but to keep it very, very simple, at some point, I think that it begins to dawn on you that there's no bedrock that is you. There's no fortress to defend. Somehow the fortress, the walls begin to just fall over. It's not even that the door opens up. It's just the whole paradigm of somebody who did something or is afraid of something or demands something. I think it just starts to kind of like mist. It's a little bewildering, actually. So there's nothing to fear, because there's nothing to fear, quite literally. There's nothing to fear. There's nothing to protect.
Yeah.
Trungpa Rinpoche, you probably heard this famous line. He said, it's like jumping out of an airplane with no parachute. But the good news is that there's no ground to land on.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is what this begins to get at.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the no fear part can also be accessed, or as often comes hand in hand with a fair amount of trepidation, because it's a wobbly feeling, because something in there has just cracked and you don't know what it is even. So this is where a lot of people talk about groundlessness. I think the groundlessness starts very, very early on. I think this is a sort of later version of that groundlessness, but it's still the progression of the same thing. It's really interesting. So I actually don't have that much to say about it, because I'm really thinking about this myself. So let's keep talking about it, Brooke, over the weeks. Yeah.
What you just said was really helpful. Thank you.
Yeah.
Great to see you.
Yeah, thank you. Nick.
Hi, Tim.
Hey.
Hey, keep telling stories. I love hearing things about Dilgo Khyentse and Trungpa Rinpoche and all of the Karmapa, any of these things that you've had experience with. It's a transmission of the lineage, and I think it's great. So thank you.
Yeah.
Just a quick question. Is Mindy Rinpoche going to give teachings in the United States next year?
Yes, he. I'm not sure. I do know for sure that he's going to do the Path of Liberation 1 and 2 in Toronto, but I haven't seen his schedule yet, and I'm not sure of that. I'm just not sure. I certainly hope so. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes. Lisa.
Good morning, Tim. It is so wonderful to see everybody this morning. This is a fantastic discussion that we're having about this whole idea of phenomena. Because in section four of the Abhidharma course, the first module that we're going through, he talks about the four mindfulnesses. And so I was playing with the mindfulness of phenomena at the gym. I certainly can be very overwhelmed by loud noises. And I thought, well, let's just take this on and see what happens if I just notice what's appearing as phenomena. And there's that lovely loud voice of this coach coaching someone. It drives me crazy. And I said, no, this is just phenomena. And it was quite interesting. I don't know if she left the room or if it just changed. It just seemed to change, because we also learn about how sounds are echoes. They're not real. But also, as far as the protection piece and fear, Rinpoche in his retreat mentioned awareness is our greatest protection. So I mentioned this to a friend whose child was being bullied. And I said, we talked a lot, but I said to her at the end, his awareness, that he is aware, he is protected. Not to not do anything, not to not take, take the necessary courses to protect himself. But I think that I'm starting to see that that's where that goes. It's really interesting, so I'll just offer that.
Well, I think actually Mingyur Rinpoche is often uses another line about that, which is great. He said, "Nothing to protect is the greatest protection."
Oh, yeah, so beautiful.
But I think this develops in us over time. So, particularly for a young person going into teenage years, becoming a young adult, I think the greatest moment that we would wish for each of us, and particularly our children, is it based on our meditation practice. And just there's a kind of magic to sitting down, pulling in our attention, and just being there and staying with ourselves. There is a sense, sometimes it's very palpable and sometimes it's very dramatic, that there is actually something here that is okay. It's a kind of groundless ground. It's a sort of center. It's like coming home. And young people can experience this if we help them. And that is the greatest protection, because otherwise they're just flying in their social world. There's no ballast. There's no flagpole, you could say. The image that Mingyur Rinpoche uses is like, the way we are right now is like a flag in the wind. And when we discover this, it's like discovering the flagpole. This, I think, is extremely important for all of us, and particularly young people, because otherwise there's no center point for young people.
Yes. Yeah. And I did mention to his mom, who I was talking to, my favorite line of Rinpoche's is, please remind your son that you are as good, whole and complete as you could ever hope to be. That
great
one. My little question
really good
here.
Wouldn't now, it be great if we could inject that in all young people?
Oh, permanently, yes. That was my first mantra. Literally, as I was going through my insanity of trying to face myself in my depression early on, that was my mantra 24/7. My question is, going forward with what we're learning with Abhidharma, which is fantastic, I still need a little bit more, I think, more meat and potatoes. So I've been going back and looking at the Dzogchen, the three points that strike the vital point, and I'm trying to figure out, where should I put myself in the course? Should I start at the very beginning?
Start at the beginning.
At the beginning, okay.
Yeah, definitely. The Dzogchen course is amazing. Okay. And the three words are the sort of easiest, sharpest, most profound presentation of the pointing out tradition that I know. I just came back. Some of you also were there from a week of with Sugna Rinpoche teaching on the three points.
Oh.
So start at the beginning.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll do that. Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Joan. You're muted, Joan. Oh, you're probably on a phone. I don't know where the unmute button is.
I got
there
it.
You go.
Okay. I am on a phone and I had to find the unmute button. You know, you mentioned quotes, Lisa mentioned quotes, and I love seeing the quotes that come online. And I would love to have a discussion of how people use quotes and, you know, their what, you know, really meaningful ones are for them. And, you know, sometimes I'll have, you know, a quote from a liturgy or something that just comes to me. And that's just beautiful. But there's a lot of other quotes and a lot of other experiences. So, you know, have a discussion of that, I think, would be really helpful.
Great. Yeah. Quotes are amazing. I have thousands of quotes. In fact, you know, as a teacher, when I teach to my community on Monday nights, all you need to do is have one good quote, and then just it explodes from there. I have a lot of faith that when the great realized lamas say something, that the quote is lovely, but something comes with it. So there's some power in them. So I'm a big fan of quotes. Also, I can learn by sound bites. So, you know, I'll get an image. A quote, you know, usually carries some sort of image or metaphor. And that goes into our system in a way that, you know, long lines of logic don't necessarily go in. So, I mean, I could probably think of five quotes that have literally changed my life. Just when I heard them, something went, ah, you know. So good question. And I'm open for people from time to time bringing in on one of these nights, one of these days, just, okay, what's a quote that has resonated for us in the last couple of weeks? Is there one that's resonated for you in the last couple of weeks?
I mean, yeah, there's the one from Tuco Ergen who said that we need to really have devotion and appreciation. I mean, I'm misquoting it, but just paraphrasing it. We need to have devotion and dedication to realized people and great compassion for those who are not.
So this was one of the quotes, one of the first ones that quite changed my world. Everybody's heard this story, but now that you've brought this up, this is, you know, everything that Tokujin said was quotable. There was nothing that he said that you couldn't just, same with Kensen Rinpoche, whatever he'd go on and teach, and you could just pick any piece of what he taught and it was publishable. There is a kind of eloquence that's a stage or an accomplishment along the path, and they had them. But I can remember going to see Tokujin once, and these were the kinds of questions I would ask him all the time. I can remember it was a dark evening at Nagi Gampa, so he was sitting there and I was sitting across this table, and there was a candlelight, and the candlelight was playing games in his big glasses, and I thought, whoa, I said, this is really weird. I'll never forget this. So of course, I asked the most intellectually stimulating and advanced question that I knew, which was, Rinpoche, tell me what the main point is. And he said, without hesitating for a second, he said, compassion for those who haven't realized their nature, devotion for those who have, and a genuine affection for all beings. And the common denominator is love. And I remember saying, Rinpoche, I got it. Enough. That I can remember. That's the entire journey in four lines. So these are the kinds of things that if that's all that we knew, just those four lines, we would have an incredibly rich Dharma. And it's instructions about how to deport oneself in the world, how to work with one's own mind. Amazing. So everybody, let's bring good quotes. Yeah. Anila.
Well, you just took my breath away with quoting Orgen Tolko again. So I'm like, my heart is feeling very open. Yeah. I want to say I appreciate everybody's comments this morning, talking about kindness, the kindness that you show us, and all of this, the offerings. I guess what I want to say, or kind of ask, is, Tim, I had another rear-ender a month ago. My car. And so for those of you who don't know,
I'm not. Your poor car.
Say again?
Your poor car.
Well, they totaled it. So it's for those of you who don't know, I'm not in the nunnery. I live in an apartment and I sustain myself. My question, and Brooke addressed it, and it's something that I'd like to explore over and over and over, is how do we apply this? Because these last 4 weeks have been incredibly stressful. And, you know, I would look to the nature of mind. I would remind myself of kindness towards myself and compassion. I would do everything that we've been taught. And it was just the most difficult time. So I just want to explore that more with people. And I guess, it was humbling.
Also good. Yeah. The path is a mess. It's a complete mess. You know, talking about great lamas, Kempa Rinpoche very famously said, one of the most beautiful things in the world, he said, mistake by mistake, we walk the unmistaken path. So I think when we're dedicated to the teachings, the world rises to meet us. And then everything becomes a potential learning, let me put it that way. So I think that you're with all the rest of us, which is, how do I work this out? How do I work this out? How do I work this out? That's the path, you know?
Yeah. So thank you.
And, you know, this is also, I think, as Nature of Mind students, or as, you know, as yogins in the world, without being overly religious about it, I think we can begin to really understand what we call the guru of the phenomenal world.
Yeah.
That the world, you know, the world becomes our training ground, you could say. As everybody knows, there's four kinds of guru. The guru in person, the guru has been written down in the scriptures, the guru, the symbolic guru of the phenomenal world, and the guru of our nature of mind. For nature of mind students, the guru of the phenomenal world becomes incredibly interesting. And so your question about, like, how do I deal with that? This is the operative question, I think, for a Vajrayana practitioner. It's like, what the hell?
I definitely felt like a flag waving in the wind. Really, you know, I knew the flagpole was there, but I felt like a flag waving in the wind.
Well, you know, I think one of the things that dawns on me all the time is that if I have the kind of troubles I have after a half a century of meditating, what would it be like for the next person? And there's what else can you do? Because it just breaks your heart, you know? So, and for someone to have their car rear-ended and et cetera, could be the end of their job, which could be at the end of their mortgage, which could be, do you know what I mean? That, like, the, so this is, I think, what we can keep in mind all the time.
Yeah.
Good.
Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, I can't hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Come a little closer to the microphone.
Okay,
there we
can
go.
Can you hear me better?
A little better.
Or maybe you can take another person. I try to fix
No, it. I can hear you now. It's okay.
Okay. So I'm very happy we have this kind of gathering with nature of my students. So thank you so much. And the first thing, is it English is not my mother tongue. And so is it possible that when you have some quote or say something, you can write it in the chat, because it's too fast for me to really get the quote. So if it's possible for you to put it in the chat.
I'll try. The quotes usually pop in my head mid-sentence. But Gail, if you ever want to just write me and say, what was that quote about, you know, then I can pull it up again.
Okay.
I can't, Lisa, it's hard for me to navigate the screen and the chat box at the same time. I just don't have
that. I wasn't only saying about you, but also about other students.
Okay.
Like, for example, Lisa had a very beautiful quote, but I didn't get everything about it.
Okay. Let's do our best.
My question was about, could you speak a little bit more about the connection between nature of my practice and the body? Because in his teaching, Mingyur Rinpoche doesn't speak that much about the body during Nature of Mind. And in my own practice, I feel that whenever I start with practicing about normal shamatha with my body and getting in touch with my body, then my practice of Nature of Mind is much more embodied, of course, but also it unfolds very differently than when I don't take the time to really be in my body. And I was wondering why Mingyur Rinpoche doesn't speak that much about the body during Nature of Mind, because sometimes even during retreat, when I practice under his guidance, direct guidance, in a way, the Nature of Mind stay a little bit not conceptual, but in the head or something a little bit not embodied. And I was wondering the connection.
Well, as you know, there are two approaches to Nature of Mind. One is called the path of liberation, or the path of wisdom, which Mingyur Rinpoche is his emphasis. The other is the path of method, where we work with the subtle body. And so Sokhna Rinpoche is very dedicated to working somewhat more in the beginning with subtle body practices. Mingyur Rinpoche teaches ninefold breath and gentle vase breathing. But for him and for his father, this path of liberation is the essence. The subtle body practices are enhancements. And depending on who you are and how you are and what works, you can emphasize that more or less. Mingyur Rinpoche does not teach them, doesn't go any further than that, because there is considerable risk when people who are at distance and can't be observed carefully, it's very easy for people to get in a lot of trouble with subtle body practices. But doing shamatha with the body, doing exercise, anything, if it helps you, that's great. That's great. Everybody is a little bit different. Sokhna Rinpoche is very dedicated to working with body, and he thinks that that's so critical for Westerners. I think he's probably right. Mingyur Rinpoche that's just not where he goes as easily. So I think this is something we need to bring in, basically. Sokhna Rinpoche presents this in his Fully Being program. He has an online course called Fully Being. And he really works with this issue of body. I encourage people to take a look. Yeah, good.
And another topic maybe for another time is also the connection or how to enhance the loving aspect of Nature of Mind.
Right. Let's come back to that. That's a whole that's a whole world in itself. Actually, it's a beautiful conversation. Yeah, good.
Okay.
Zangbo.
Oh, hello everybody. Hello Tim.
Hello.
Um, I I haven't kind of formulated my question as clearly as I should do, because it's actually still floating around in my head. But it's around the issue of creativity and nature of mind, which has always been really, really interesting to me. I mean, I'm very involved in teaching and coaching it all and doing art and things like that. And I can see so clearly how, you know, practicing creativity can really enhance nature of mind practices, and you know, as a real sort of way of grounding. And we've been talking about grounding, and just when you were talking about the guru of the phenomenal world and our inner guru, and I'm just, you know, it's there were good phrases, and I'm just sort of wondering what you or anybody else might have to say about sort of ways that we can, you know, in a very contemporary way rather than necessarily drawing on traditional ideas, but actually quite creatively and fluidly integrating creativity, you know, which is a way of grounding in the body as well. I mean, there was a book, I think, written about Dharma and dance, for instance. And, you know, whereas I tend to work more with sort of mixed media, visual arts and writing. But I'd be really interested to hear what anybody's got to say about that, or what you've got to say about that too. Because
yeah, you know,
it's an area which isn't worked on. I mean, Tsigar Khontra Rinpoche has said
yeah, Khontra Rinpoche has written about it. Trungpa Rinpoche wrote a pretty much groundbreaking book.
Yeah,
he talked about it all the time.
Yeah.
But if anybody here has anything to add to that, but we'll keep this in mind, Zangbo, in the moving forward. But anybody have anything to add? I'm the least artistic person in the world, so I don't know anything about this question.
Yeah, I'd be really interested to hear what people have to say.
Anybody?
Well, I'll just pipe in here, Tim, because I've wondered about this, because often when I meditate, an idea comes in my mind. And of course, I know it's a niyam and I know I shouldn't chase after it, but I come up with a beautiful poem. And then I have to tell myself, well, that's just that. It's impermanent. Let it go. But there's something I would like to explore this too, because how do we work with these experiences that we have when they're on the cushion that are so uplifting and inspiring, and how do we keep them in their proper place so that they're not something that we're attached to and grasping onto?
You know, sometimes if something comes to my mind, there's the term Trungpa used to call these flashes of insight, that sometimes if I'm in the middle of a practice session or something, I'll just write it down. So I don't have to just write just one or two words to remind me, so that then I can let it go in the practice. But there's a lot to say about this, and we can come back to it. Jemmy?
Yeah, it's interesting. I had a question brewing, and I wasn't going to ask it this time, but this discussion on creativity, when Lisa says that she kind of just leaves it alone, I don't anymore. I mean, it seems like my question was going to be kind of working with confidence, and the more that comes up, excuse me, I'm becoming more confident, but more belligerent in a way, you know. So, like, if I get creatively inspired, I'm just going to go with it, even if I'm practicing, and it's like I tell, you know, I don't know. I think it's okay, but part of me thinks, oh, you should be more disciplined, and then I think, well, it self-liberates, and I actually have an experience of that. Like, there's no problem here. Why is this more, you know, if everything is empty luminosity, why is this activity more sacred than this activity? So I'm kind of taking bigger risks with what goes through my mind and what inspires me and what I want to do. And
Great. Good. Yeah, and remember, the whole thing will change. The next day will change, a month later, what inspires us. But go for it. It's great. Yeah. Zangmo, did you have another comment?
Yeah, I remember going on a course with Tenzin Wangyal Rinpoche a few years ago when he was actually doing a course on Dharma and Arts, and he was trying to refer it back to Trekchur and Togal. But he was saying, well, you know, we can, if we've got sort of all our pleasures going on, our rubbish going on, this is like the Trekchur, I can't pronounce it, but Trekchur, you know, that we can, don't have to deny those things. It's like, you know, being with our, you know, our stuff and being aware of it at the same time and, you know, perhaps recognizing its emptiness. And then he's also talking about, well, how, you know, if we're resting then in nature of mind, we can express from that, you know, that there's different minds we can work from and working with awareness and whatever materials we're using. I don't know what if anybody's got any comments on that one.
You, as you know, Trungpa Rinpoche talked about this extensively. In a very, very creative way. He was an artist on many different levels. So what else? Oh, I think we've come to the end of our time. And I think everybody knows that you can email me if questions come up. And let's just take a minute again to appreciate the fact that we've had this opportunity together, and that perhaps if anything that's been helpful or uplifting or wholesome has come from this last hour, let's just imagine that we can spread it universally to everybody who needs it so badly right now. This is the dedication piece. Maybe a tip for homework for the next couple of weeks, which everybody will forget, but that's okay. Which is just imagine if we have the kind of hard times that we have, what it must be like for people who have no bearing, no North Star, no example, no community, no tradition. And then in that way, our own confusion becomes compassion. All right, everybody. Thank you so much. Let's unmute and say goodbye.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Thanks, Jim.
Bye.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you, everybody. Wonderful to do this.
Next time.
Also wonderful.
Thanks, Anna.